All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin, here with you once again. Dom is actually out traveling this weekend, but fear not, because with me is someone I've been personally wanting to have back on the podcast for a really long time. Very excited to talk to Amanda Rabinowitz. Amanda, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, Colin. I'm happy to be making another appearance on the Dom or Colin podcast.
That's right. Yeah, your first appearance was a week where I was out, and you came in and filled in for me talking about, I think, Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers alongside Dom. And you did such a great job and left such a lasting impression that I've truly been waiting for an opportunity to have you back on the show. So this is perfect.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to be talking about this particular season.
Yeah, well, hey, it sounds like you are on board with what seems to be the rough kind of general sentiment that this is at least in the discussion for best season ever. Don't at me. Where are you on that kind of spectrum?
Well, like, I'll start off by saying that I'm the type of person who, in general, I'm a more of a glasses half full type of person. I was still relatively high on Ghost Island, you know, going into what seemed like, you know, the inevitable home stretch where Dom and Wendell, you know, ruled the game. So, you know, so I'm not always the most critical voice, but I have to say that there's been something about having a season that's just this consistently good that has made me realize that I really was wrong all those other times when people were telling me that I was, you know, just being too high on other seasons. This season is just, you know, delivered on every level in terms of characters, strategy, unpredictability. So, yeah, I have been completely thrilled.
Well, one thing I do want to say, I've referenced this a few times in the past, but it really has stuck with me. I remember being at one of the first live Know-It-Alls I ever went to the night before the Survivor episode and Know-It-Alls event. They usually have a big karaoke get together. And I remember talking to Jordan Kalish just in like the corner at some point. I was asking him however he felt about that season. And he said, well, first of all, I love every Survivor season. And that really resonated with me because I certainly feel like for me, and I feel comfortable saying for Dom as well, I'm willing to speak on his behalf in this capacity, when seasons are kind of a little slower or a little more predictable, I think I do kind of tend to overlook just how frankly lucky we are to be such super fans of a franchise that has been so enduring and continues to try to at least improve. And we can always know that even if this season isn't working out, that's going to have basically no impact on any future season. So who really cares? But what is it about this season in particular that you would like them to try to incorporate more of into future seasons? What are the small things you think they're getting right that they may have gotten wrong in some of these more recent seasons?
Oh man. Well, for one thing, I mean, and this might be a hot take, but you know, when the theme was first released, I think that, you know, we all had our eye rolling skepticism towards this idea of David versus Goliath. And when they first revealed the tribes, there was a lot of that, like, oh, okay. So we have this, you know, bartender who's a Goliath of what, you know, it was that same kind of forced tribe assortment stuff. But I actually think that there was something brilliant about this theme in that, you know, it actually captured a relationship dynamic that's meaningful within the game and has something to do with what we viewers are interested in. So, you know, we had a tribe of like stated underdogs and a tribe of front runners of Goliath. And I think that that's helped them tell stories in a way that actually makes sense. Whereas I think some of the themes like Ghost Island have actually like made it more difficult for them to latch on to compelling narratives.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ghost Island is a great example of a theme that does sound interesting in practice. And I will grant that it probably could have been something that went a lot better under different kind of circumstances. But it was also something kind of like Redemption Island, I think, falls into this category as well, that I think is oftentimes going to just actively detract from the way that they're able to tell the actual story of the season, when they need to spend so much time explaining what's going on with the Ghost Island advantages and who's there and how that's going to impact things, and, you know, Redemption Island duels and things like that, where the twist, I think, really eats away from what could have otherwise been a much more interesting season. Whereas you're right, I think the David versus Goliath theme plays perfectly into the stories it seems like Survivor is addicted to telling season after season.
Yeah, it's like, it's hard to make a game mechanic a story, right? Like, I think it's like, you know, an idol is a game mechanic and that works. And, you know, David versus Goliath has some kind of narrative, but when they try to like mash together a theme and a game mechanic, I feel like that's when they have to really force some of this stuff and spend a lot of time, and it just takes away from their ability to craft the show.
Yeah. I'm curious. I know you are professionally a psychologist. I'm sorry, I don't want to confuse you with a psychiatrist. I don't want to offend
I'm a lawyer, Colin.
Okay, I'm sorry. Listen, there are a lot of people that I think are lawyers that do not turn out to be lawyers. So don't get too offended by being singled out there.
I am a psychologist.
Okay. Is Survivor, or have you noticed potentially Survivor being more popular among people who work in that kind of field?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I wish.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, so I'll say this. I mean, in my professional circles, I almost never run into somebody who is a Survivor super fan. But I will say that in circles of Survivor super fans, I often find people who have studied psychology or sociology or have an interest in that on some level. But for whatever reason, you know, in the, at the level, you know, in my more professional or academic circles, I don't tend to find Survivor super fans. It doesn't seem to be as popular among psychologists as it is among, like, say, improv comedians, apparently.
Yeah. I would suspect psychologists have a bit more of a busy schedule than most improv comedians. But at least for me, certainly, as someone who plays poker full time, and I feel like there is a big noticeable interest in the poker world in Survivor. And I thought it might possibly be the case in psychology as well, just because I think that kind of game element and the psychological kind of human on human thought, who's going to outthink the other one, would be something that might draw in people who are professionally interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's what I think, and that's the pitch that I've been making to people over and over again. I guess it's probably just, you know, you get into any niche at some level and, you know, it's a smaller pool, but I definitely think that there's a lot for people who are interested in social dynamics or, you know, human personality in different contexts. There's a lot to Survivor. It's definitely one of the things that has kept me so interested in it for so long.
Yeah, well, hopefully you can get some of your coworkers down there at the law firm on board with it quickly.
Right.
Let's dive into this most recent episode of David versus Goliath, which I'm being told is episode 12. And full disclosure, I'm being told by Amanda off air that it's episode 12. So we'll roll with episode 12. And incidentally, Amanda, I want to thank you, now that we are on air, for being so patient as we got started on this podcast. You really got the full Dom and Colin experience as we struggled through some audio issues on my end, of course. But it seems, I hope that those have all been sorted out. But let's get into this new season of David versus Goliath. And I thought it was interesting, and I don't know how much you pay attention to the previously on Survivor itself, but one thing I thought was worth noting is this might honestly be, like, literally, not classic Colin Stone hyperbole, the shortest previously on Survivor in, like, the history of the show, where it's literally just says, previously on Survivor, Christian and Gabby voted out at David, shocking Nick, Davey and Angelina, eight are left who will be voted out tonight. Like, a one sentence previously on Survivor. And as weird as this may sound, I actually think, my thought right away when I saw this at the beginning of the episode was, we're in for a real treat tonight. If nothing political that happened before this really is going to matter that much, it must be some kind of chaos going on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I did notice that it was a short previously on Survivor. And Yeah, I mean, I guess that it does make sense given, you know, the thinking about where we ended up going. I mean, the only thing that I noted about that I thought, because, you know, I am a listener of the Dom and Colin podcast, so I do notice these things, was, you know, what got mentioned and the fact that they did mention that Angelina was one of the people that got blindsided by the move. And of course she was, but it just sort of drew attention to me that, okay, that she's somebody who, you know, is who felt blindsided by that and who might be that might influence who she aligns with going forward.
Yeah, I feel like Angelina, especially coming out of that vote, was in a really interesting spot. And I still think that going forward, she's going to be in a really potentially pivotal kind of situation here, where it does seem like people aren't desperate to be working with Angelina and wanting to make, you know, deals with the end to her with her at this point. But at the same time, I feel like she's got to be pretty far down the list as things stand right now in terms of the list of targets, when we've still got Christian and Allison there doing so well in all the challenges, and then Nick and Davey up to all their hijinks as well. Mm-hmm. What have you been thinking about Angelina and just the spot that she's found herself in right now and where she fits in?
You know, I think that she's in a really good spot right now. And actually, I watched this episode a couple of different times, and it wasn't until the rewatch where I realized, you know, that Angelina actually has been kind of making these relationships. You know, all of a sudden you realize, okay, yeah, she's been with Mike White since the beginning, and oh, okay, and she was really getting close to Carl before he was blindsided, and she seems like she has something with Nick. So I think that and she's not really on anybody's radar as one of these big threats that needs to get out. So I think that the fact that she's around at this point, at this stage in the game, means that, you know, she's probably not going anywhere.
Yeah, I last week declared Gabby, of course, the person not ever getting voted out this season. I thought she was the front runner to kind of take that role that we see, I feel like, filled pretty much every season right around this point by someone who is not just considered enough of a threat compared to pretty much everyone else within the cast. And with Gabby now gone, I think Angelina is certainly a compelling candidate in there. And I don't mean that to sound like for either Gabby or Angelina, like they weren't out there and playing well, because I do continue to believe that Gabby, as we'll get into a little later, was doing some really impressive stuff this week that just didn't end up going her way. But I really loved seeing a lot of what I saw out of Gabby this week. And similarly with Angelina, I feel like she probably isn't getting anything close to the credit she realistically deserves. I feel like she has probably, for my money, been like one of the people getting more buried by the edit this season. Is that something that's come through for you at all?
That Angelina's getting buried?
Yeah, Angelina, and Gabby certainly to some extent as well, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing things from Angelina that are, you know, meant to be unflattering. I mean, they're definitely not portraying her negotiating for the rice as the heroic moment that, you know, she wanted to tell her mom about. You know, that's obviously, we're being presented that in a way that is, you know, supposed to elicit a certain reaction in the audience. And, you know, and I'll say that, you know, she's a really, really brilliant casting choice, because I don't think that we ever get somebody who is, you know, she's very competent, she's very self-aware, she's very smart, she's very, she has a lot of great instincts, but she just kind of like can't take her foot off the gas, and that makes it go a little bit too far. So I feel like she's this very kind of complex character in this spot that we don't usually see. She's not like just like a, you know, I don't want to even compare her to a Philip Shepherd, but it's not like that kind of character who right. is, you know, unself-aware and doesn't know how they're coming across. Like, she's actually seems to have a lot of strengths. Yet there's a little piece that she's not able to modulate that actually makes her great on the other players and also the audience.
Right. And I think we're seeing a lot of a much higher percentage of that element to her personality that I'm guessing would come across if we were spending more time on Angelina. Like, I feel she would not be a difficult person at all to give a pretty glowing edit to if they were so inclined. And actually, one TV comparison that I had for Angelina, I was watching some Brooklyn Nine-Nine this week. I don't know if you watched that, but anyone out there, there are certainly some Amy Santiago vibes to Angelina in both the very positive and potentially kind of over-prepared or some might deem annoying elements to Angelina, I think, are almost entirely well-intentioned.
Yeah, no, I am familiar with that character. I did watch a couple seasons of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and then, of course, there was the Mike White comparison to Tracy Flick from Election, mm-hmm. Which I saw a long time ago. But, you know, and the unfortunate thing about the Angelina character type and the way that it's being sort of steered into, it's this, like, kind of classic, like, annoying, overachiever, young woman type of archetype that I think that those two comedic characters play on. And I think that you see a little bit of her bristling against that and when she, you know, and she makes a lot of valid points in social media about, okay, well, I did all of these good things, but, you know, it got portrayed as if I was being silly or I was being egotistical or I was being bossy or pushy when really I was just, you know, taking on a leadership role in the tribe.
What do you think is the best case scenario for Angelina right now in terms of final result? Like, let's say she makes the final three. What is the cap on the number of jury votes you could see her getting?
I think there's a few people that she could get to vote for her, but it just depends on what kind of combination she could end up with, because there's people who I think would have voted for her against, say, Gabby and maybe throw in like a Kara or an Allison. But I don't think with Gabby gone that there's another two that she could go into the final three with and get more than one vote. I would say maybe one at best.
Yeah, I feel like the over-under of 0.5 sounds about right to me in timelines where Angelina is in there as a finalist. But I think that's, to go back to another compliment for just this season in general, I think one of the surest signs that you are watching a good season is you find yourself saying, well, any one of the remaining seven people in these games could end up in there in the finals, and no combination of them seems that beatable. It doesn't seem like it's going to be any scenario close to someone dragging two goats to the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So definitely very excited anytime that is the case. And I think this season, historically strong in that regard. Let's talk a little about the fallout from this last vote that we ended up seeing, because Nick is back at camp and he is not thrilled about Christian and Gabby leaving him out on this blindside against Carl, and probably not thrilled about the idea to blindside Carl in the first place. And we get a sequence of confessionals here from Nick about how he's going to be trying to blindside Christian as soon as he gets a chance. Amanda, is Nick someone, and I'm now realizing, did you potentially have any sort of familiarity with Nick before this season began, or when, more generally, what have you been making of Nick to this point?
Well, so I did know who Nick was, and I had seen, like, so he's an RHAP patron, and so am I, and we're in a couple of, you know, we're in a Facebook group together, so I'm sure that, like,
best friends, in other words.
Exactly. So, you know, he's the godfather of my children. So I did have familiarity with him, and I sort of, you know, didn't know what to think going into the season. And I always do get a little bit nervous whenever I know that a super fan is playing or a representative from the fan community, because, you know, you want them to do well, you want them to represent the fan community. We often, as a community, tend to turn on that type of character. I really just didn't know what to expect. And I've been, like, totally blown away by how Nick is playing. I mean, I think that he is, he's been doing a great job of putting himself in a good position, with a lot of different players, but in a subtle way where he's not out front and he hasn't really been a visible target. You know, the naming alliances is like kind of a goofy thing that people have, you know, been able to poke fun at. But there's been something that I think is kind of subtly brilliant about it, whereas, you know, people have noted, OK, when you give something a name, it gives it this whole other level of validity. It makes it more real. People feel more attached to it. But I also think that, like, the fact that the names are a little bit goofy has made people, like, even underestimate Nick's threat level even more. You know, like Mike White saying, like, oh, we're doing this silly Erkadar thing and we're the rock stars. I think it's caused him to be looked at in kind of like this more, you know, playful, silly kind of way, when really he's been very clever and strategic throughout.
In your professional opinion, is that something that would work more or less across the board, or is that a tactic taking that kind of like goofy nickname approach that is going to be more successful for specifically like someone in the Nick kind of demographic? Or do you feel like that could have been working for Mike White himself just as easily if he had been, you know, thinking on that level?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it definitely plays into other things that Nick has going for him, like having, you know, a Southern accent and being like in this more good old boy type. I think it's like people are probably already inclined to underestimate him in a way. Like, I think it's probably it's akin to something that Christian was sort of doing successfully with the Brochachos, of kind of like making himself the beta and like, oh, shucks, guys, it's so cool that you're letting me hang out with you. But I don't know if Mike White could like sincerely pull that kind of thing off. But I think that to the extent that you can, you know, make people think that you are looking up to them and feeling subordinate to them. Actually, Sophie Clark said that on a RHAP podcast that one of her, the strategies she would use if she played Survivor again, was to pretend to fall in love with somebody, because it would just make them think that they could sort of lead her around anywhere, but then she would really be the one in power because she knew that she wasn't sincerely in love with them. So, but I think it's kind of a variant on that, but I think you're totally right that it kind of plays into some things that Nick already has going for him.
Yeah, I think the Nick type, something that is probably not as crucial as I'm going to make it seem, but you hit on something that I really think is a huge advantage in Survivor, that Southern accent. Like, if you can combine that kind of Tom Sawyer vibe with being a person who is actually really sharp and calculating, that is a lethal combination out there on Survivor. And I don't know at this point if it's a compliment or an insult to compare someone to JT Thomas, but I certainly could see a lot of JT 1.0 in Nick here, although certainly with a less a cast less eager to just hand him $1 million.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
All right, good. So let's, I think, talk a little about the loved ones visit. It is loved ones time once again here on Survivor. What is just your general take on the loved ones? Are you someone who every season you know ahead of time, okay, it's loved ones week, get the Kleenex box ready, or are you able to at this point take it? Because frankly, with me and Dom in here talking through like 14 loved ones visits at this point, we are fresh out of things to say about loved ones and relationships.
Well, have you guys made note of the fact that in a sibling relationship, neither one is the parent?
We noticed the trend. We weren't willing to lock it in just yet, but now after this season, the conclusive proof is there.
So, I mean, with the loved ones visits, I feel like I'm always like really cynical about it at the outset, you know, even though like I am a very empathic person but the whole, like, you know, there's something about the way that Jeff says you're playing for love and it's all laid on very thick. And I do usually go in pretty cynical, but there's always like one or two relationships that actually does get me choked up. So that's kind of my overall stance on the loved ones visit. And this particular one, I would say that it was it was definitely Nick and his dad, and then Christian and his girlfriend were the two that really did sort of get me.
Yeah, I recently, or like in the last week, had not one but two separate floods in the hallway of my apartment, and thankfully was home and able to barricade all the water both times. I promise this is going somewhere. As a result, they ended up cutting our water off for like I went like 2 days once and then a day and a half again over the course of this last week without running water in my apartment. And I thought that would be no big deal, but it got to the point, even after only like 36 hours, where I'd be like watching something on TV and someone would turn on the water faucet and I'd be like, oh my God, I want that. That's magic. And I think the same would probably be roughly the case for me as it pertains to the Survivor Loved Ones Challenge. Like, as someone who can text my mom anytime I want and who gets way more texts from my mom than I necessarily want, I haven't had the water shut off, so to speak, in that department ever before. Well, but it's totally possible that after, 2 days out on the island, I would be missing my family more than anyone else out there.
That's hilarious that it took you being deprived of water to think, oh, I wonder if this is how people feel about human relationships.
Good thing I have a psychologist here. I don't know the accurate term for it, but like the deprivation element made just a running water faucet seem like a magic trick to me.
Yeah, yeah. That totally makes sense. Yeah, and the thing that I get a kick out of, in the loved ones visit a little bit, is how there's that imbalance in some of the relationships. So like whenever a parent like comes to see their child who's playing Survivor, the parent is really emotional and really invested. But like Kara and her brother, Kara is breaking down and she's like so happy to see her brother, and her brother's just like, yeah, that's cool. Cause he's not going through the same experience of being, he's just like, oh yeah, my sister, we talk sometimes. But it definitely makes sense that, and it's not just like the missing your family. I think it's also the fact that, you're having this human contact within the game, but it's all completely shrouded in paranoia and deception and anxiety about, what's going to happen in the game and where you stand. So I think that just the comfort of being able to look at somebody and know that they can, give you a hug with no ulterior motive, that's got to be really powerful.
Right. Yeah. And it was Kara we heard talk about that, right? When like knowing that her brother was truly out there with her best interests in mind. And I think that's one kind of underrated aspect to this loved one's visit, is like, particularly for the people who win time with their loved one, is kind of what I guess I'll call the Justice Welchel effect of them kind of snapping the island relationships back into perspective and people realizing, oh yeah, I have a lot more going on than what's happening, in front of me every day here. And there's way more at stake than I've necessarily been thinking about. Like I remember talking to Stephen Fishback many, many years ago when we went through his game in Token Sheens, and he talked about getting to meet up with his brother, and he would say like, oh yeah, I really like JT, I may go to the end with him. And it was really his brother like, dude, you've known this guy for a month, what are you even thinking about, that got him thinking correctly again.
Yeah, because I'm sure that you sort of like find these little oases within the game where you feel like you have trust with people, but then, actually being reminded of what your life and your relationships are outside of the game really snaps that back into perspective. And I've definitely heard Stephen talk about that in other places too, that it sort of reminds you that, these aren't the important people in your life. You don't owe these people anything, and you're not really best friends, even if you might make real relationships down the road, that this is all within a very contrived situation.
Yeah. So you mentioned Nick's dad, Jim, and Christian's girlfriend, Emily, being the two real loved ones standouts for you. Amanda, I'm going to ask you to officially name the first annual Aunt Patty Loved One of the Year.
Oh my God.
Because I'm totally with you that those are the two standouts, but I couldn't decide between the two of them. So you get the tie-breaking vote. Let's just assume that Dom is disagreeing with whomever I vote for. So you get to break the tie.
Well, this feels so cruel because, you know, these are both, I'm sure, amazing people, and they were both really, really emotional moments. Oh gosh, you know, like I was really, 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 I was, oh God. So the thing I'm, the piece I'm struggling with right now is there was something about the way that Nick was just like wringing his hands and crying that like was, and I'm a mom of two boys. They're very little. They're 1 and 4, but he just looked like such a little baby that you just wanted to pick up and give a hug and say, it's going to be all right. There was like something so raw and beautiful that, you know, that got brought out in Nick from seeing the loved ones visit. But in terms of the loved one themselves really bringing something magical, I'm going to have to give that one to Emily.
Okay, so donating blood to feed 5 children, not enough for Amanda Rabinowitz. Got it, understood. No, I think that's a totally understandable pick. Emily was fantastic, and I certainly wouldn't be opposed to seeing not just those two, but I also loved Davy's mom, Hazel, was a lot of fun. There were a lot great loved ones this season, and I feel like some good material for a potential blood versus water. Yeah.
Oh, or just, you know, Angelina and her mom on The Amazing Race.
Sure,
it was a good group. I thought of, you know, Mike White and his boyfriend, like, were just wonderfully kind of like aloof and detached, which really fits with like the way Mike White has been playing this season. I mean, I'm sure that they have this very, very deep and wonderful relationship, but it definitely seemed to fit with his character.
Yeah. So they end up running this challenge in pairs, and Angelina and Davy end up winning here, and that ends up being Angelina's first reward. She was the final person who hadn't had a reward since the merge, so she is finally on the board there, and they end up picking Nick and Mike to enjoy this kind of floating picnic with them. Anything else on the loved ones as far as you are concerned? Because we see some talk on this reward challenge about like a final four possibility, but I'm not really sure if anyone in the audience or anyone in that conversation was even believing that.
Well, what do you think? So I agree with you that configuration of four, you know, was probably that was, you know, just the thing that you say whenever you're in a group of four.
Right.
But I was, you know, I was thinking about, you know, Angelina's, I started to think more about Angelina's relationship with Nick and her relationship with Mike. In that, you know, after they made these decisions. And I wonder if those three are actually much closer than we may have been made aware of up to this point.
I am really curious about that as well. And in particular, to focus on one of those people right now, Mike White, I think, is in a fascinating spot here. And maybe he is the person just kind of never getting voted out, or at least the person up through Final Four will not be getting voted out. And then maybe he has to win the challenge of the fire or whatever from there. But it really does seem like all season long, as far as I've been able to tell, well, he hasn't been batting 1,000 in terms of constantly keeping people feeling amazing about him. Like, I'm thinking back early on of him in the premiere, I think it was, going looking for the idol. It really does seem like, by and large, Mike White, to put it in, to just kind of paraphrase it, I suppose, shout out to Stephen Fishback's new podcast, and it's not even a correct use of the word paraphrase, but to put it into one word, I feel like Mike White at this point is playing impeccably, almost. Like, I feel like it's been hard for me to see things out of Mike White that I wouldn't be recommending people go out there and try to emulate if they were out there playing Survivor in a future season. But at the same time, I'm not really feeling great about Mike White's kind of long-term prospects here, because I feel like when the time comes between now and the pendulum swinging over to it not really mattering as much about who's the biggest threat and more about who has your back, I don't know who is necessarily going to be dying to have Mike White's back. So to tie it all back into this potential kind of threesome, I think that could be a potentially really appealing prospect for Mike White, but one of many appealing prospects for Mike White.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that he's kept himself in a really good spot in terms of, you know, being in on the vote, finding his way to the right side, being able to have a say in who goes home. And I think that there's a lot of people who would be willing to take him to the end. I can see him making his way into a lot of final three plans. What is harder for me is to see, you know, that what votes he would have on the jury if he got to the end in some of those configurations. And there's part of me that doesn't know, you know, I think how much of it is everything that Mike's doing right and how much of it is the fact that people aren't threatened by the idea of somebody going to the getting to the end who is already an extremely wealthy and successful person.
That may be a factor as well. And at this point, I don't think we've seen literally anything, right, about people acknowledging, oh, we all know Mike White doesn't need this money.
No, we haven't heard that on the show, to my memory.
Although I guess in thinking through it, only really Jimmy Johnson has had that said about him. Even like the Scott Pollards and Jeff Kents of the world. I guess people didn't know it was Jeff Kent other than Dawson. But it seems like that's rarely something they even get into. We often hear from that person, I'm worried about people finding out and feeling that way. But it seems like over the course of Survivor history, we've never really seen anyone feeling that way.
Yeah,
not that they wouldn't, by the way. Like, I think they do know Mike White.
Yeah.
But
it just doesn't make it to air.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Yeah. What about the dentist in, was that season one? I mean, I'm trying
season
to
three,
say.
Carl was a dentist.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of like a situation Russell was hoping for where word just got out that he was very successful in real life. And I think Russell was trying to get word out that he was really successful in real life.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't, and maybe Dan Lembo with his alligator shoes that Holly Hoffman threw in the water in Nicaragua. I could see that potentially playing a role for him there as well. But I think Mike is going to be someone that I'm counting on at this point being in the finale. And if I'm looking at my top kind of tier of most realistic finals three combination, I think Mike would be in a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get into the immunity challenge this week. I don't have a ton to say about the challenge itself. This was another endurance immunity where you are supposed to keep the right amount of pressure on this very narrow pole while balancing on a perch. And ultimately, Kara is going to be the victor here. And Kara is someone that, unlike Gabby and Angelina, when we were talking a little bit about them earlier and the kind of treatment that they have been getting over the course of this season and how I thought they were kind of getting buried, I would say Kara is someone that continues to look nothing but glowing as far as I can tell. What have you thought about Kara to this point?
Yeah, I agree with you that we see a lot of good stuff from Kara. It's not that like we're seeing that she's really leading any votes or, you know, strategically manipulating the game. But what we do see is she's sort of consistently showing us that she's aware of what's going on. She's aware of her position. She's able to repair relationships or talk to different people. People come and give her information. So I think that, you know, we're not really seeing her front and center in anything, but we're also not seeing her being totally out in the dark for, you know, any of the votes or for any of the major things that are going on. So I definitely think you have to feel pretty good about Kara, and she hasn't come up as, you know, she hasn't come up as a vote, I don't think, yet in this season, even as a decoy vote. And she seems to pretty much, she has been out on the vote a couple times, I think. I'm not 100%, but when that happens, you always see her come and get right and seem to really seamlessly integrate with whatever the group was that had, you know, just pulled off the blind side.
Right. Yeah. And that, I mean, the reason I brought up Angelina and Gabby is because when we were talking about them, I feel like they were also people who could have gotten edits this good and just for whatever reason didn't end up going their way this time. But I would say about Kara, and maybe this is partially because we're seeing so much good stuff from her when we do get to see her, but pretty much everything I've seen, like I was saying about Mike White, seems to leave me really comfortable and confident in Kara, I almost called her Sarah, as a Survivor player, just because I feel like there is so much value in being the person that we've talked about so many times over the years, who is just relentlessly cool and always laid back. And when people come to talk to you, they know it's not going to be a big issue. A fight's never going to break out. They can confide in you and feel like you're listening. And it seems like Kara is absolutely that person this season, as far as what we've seen so far.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I think that what she's, I don't know if Kara is going to, you know, win the game. I don't think I would put a lot of money on that right now, but I would say that if she did win the game, it would be in the Michelle Fitzgerald formula of winning the game. And I think that it's like a skill set that doesn't always pop on the screen, but I think that it's a type of player that you just have to feel good about in almost any situation, in any season, in any set of circumstances, because that person is never going to draw attention to themselves. They're always going to be able to integrate socially in a variety of different groups. So, you know, I think that she's looking really strong.
Yeah, I mean, good Survivor is often going to be very boring Survivor. You know, some of the people over the years that Dom and I have spent the most time really praising as players and talking up as being underrated in terms of the eyes of history are the players like Earl Cole or like Danny Boatwright, who I think really perfectly fit into that archetype as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's not going to be, you know, Tony Vlachos is incapable of playing this kind of game, and it's not going to be the most exciting kind of TV, but it is, when played well, a wildly effective kind of personality type to have out there on the island. And certainly Kara seems to be holding her own in the challenges now that they've become individual as well. So could potentially be a force in that department too. But someone else who's been holding their own in the challenges, our second place finisher in this week's immunity challenge, which is the only segue I can think of to dive into a discussion about my man, Davey, who I have been loving since the beginning. And this week in particular, I thought had a really strong episode. What have you been thinking about Davey and just this kind of devilish guy by his own admission that has somehow made it all the way here, despite being out on a few votes by now, and still doesn't seem like he has a great path to the end, but still in there with a chance?
Yeah, I mean, Davey is so much fun. Like, the infectious enthusiasm that he's bringing to, I mean, his confessionals, it's just clear that he's having the time of his life, and he's not playing scared. He seems to be smart, but he's not overthinking things. He's like aware, he's taking risks. So he's been, you know, phenomenally fun to watch, and he's been, you know, doing well in the challenges too. He won that second immunity in the double episode, and he was pretty close in this one. So, I mean, I think that Davey's great, and he definitely has a couple of these flashy moves under his belt. So, you know, in this episode, he's going to, you know, make another risky move that I'm sure that we'll talk about more. But it's clear, you know, if he gets to the end, I think he has a really strong case for himself.
Yeah, and I'm totally on board with that. And more so, just hearing Davey talk about Survivor really gets him a lot of points in my book. Like, when I hear these confessionals, he is constantly framing things in the terms in which I would like to hear them framed, as potentially like self-aggrandizing as that is. It's very nice for me to hear someone go out there and say, yeah, I know Christian has tried to blindside me twice and has left me out of votes. I don't care. It's in my best interest to leave that door open. And to me, not only that, but leaving Christian in as the obvious threat. You know, we'll talk about him going and blowing up the plan and telling Christian to his face, hey, they're coming for you. And I think that meat shield strategy for someone in particular like Davey, who is, it seems pretty charming and obviously good at the challenges, is so vital. And people like Christian out there on the island don't just grow on trees. Like, I think that is a really strong priority for this round. And overall, I would honestly say I've been reluctant to give this take, not just about Davey, but about pretty much anyone on this season, because I thought there were so many candidates still remaining who I could see kind of giving this title to. But for me, after this episode, I would say, as a random first timer playing against other random first timers, all unknown to each other, I would bet on Davey more than anyone in this cast to come out winning a season of Survivor.
Oh, wow. That's I definitely see where you're coming from with that. You know, I do think that there's other contenders in this cast.
For sure. Yeah.
But you were talking about Davey, like, and you said, you know, we talked about Mike earlier, but you were saying, oh, like Mike, he's talking about the game in a way that you like. And I think that there's such an interesting contrast there, because you're right that they're both able to kind of pull themselves away and say, like, okay, I don't, you know, I'm going to make these moves that are smart for me, and I'm not going to, you know, play in this emotionally reactive way where if somebody blindsides me, I don't want to work with them. But I think Mike is doing it and seeming emotionally detached to the other players, whereas Davey is able to do that, but still seem really connected and seem really, you know, empathetic and seem really charming. And, you know, so I think that that's something that Davey is doing that's like a really unique combination, that he can like be an emotional person that makes people feel close to him, you know, by sharing those things. But at the same time, he can step back and make a more calculated move.
You ready for, you know, I compared Nick to JT 1.0 earlier. I'll make another bold historical comparison for Davey here. I feel like Davey is essentially getting the opportunity to play the role in the game that Malcolm always wanted to play, but he was thrust into being the golden boy and never really got to be the kind of like bad guy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, I think Malcolm would have loved it if he could just befriend everyone and then slowly turn on them. And not that that's necessary, that's not a perfect description of what Davey is doing, but I think Davey is a ton like Malcolm in that he is so good at actively getting you on his side socially, compared to, like, as you were talking about, Mike White is great with people, but I think you are right that it's a little more detached necessarily than it seems like the Davey and Malcolm type seems big on almost actively leading people on.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, honestly, a name that would jump to mind for me if I were to compare Davey to someone else. But what did you think of Davey and the way he ended up approaching this situation where he finds out that the hit is out on Christian, but Christian has an idol, and he decides he wants to go and tell Christian that they're coming for him?
Yeah, so I'm still, you know, I want you to help me out with this, because I still feel like I have to think this all the way through. I like it on the outset. I like it. And my gut reaction is that this is probably the right move. It really sort of, and I think it ends up, and I think it's the right move for him if he can effectively keep Christian in the game without losing Nick. And I think that he still does need to be able to vote with Nick. I think he needs I think he needs his relationship with Nick to stay intact in order to get through the next couple of votes. So I think that there's a possibility that this could have backfired, but because it didn't, I think that it was the right move. I think he is absolutely right that I think Nick has other options and would probably prefer not to go to the end with Davey. So I think that he does need to keep another shield to protect him for a few more votes. But I still sort of need to see, you know, how Davey can now get to the end, having made this move.
Yeah, and I think Davey will have the benefit of having seen HHH and that endgame play out, right? Where he will know it's at least not a battle to get to Final Three. All I need to do is get to Final Four, and then I'll have a chance to play the immunity and build a fire if the immunity doesn't go my way. And that's totally fine with me. I will happily take those chances. And so I am with you. I am very much a fan of this move, just in general, because I, at this point, am willing to give Davey enough credit to understand the political dynamics out there a lot better than we do, having watched, 11 edited episodes. And if Davey felt like leaving Christian in as a meat shield was something that was so close to mandatory, he had to run and tell Christian as soon as he got word that Christian might somehow leave. I'm willing to give Davey credit for just that, like, I'm willing to trust his judgment, essentially, is what I mean. Like, that was indeed in his best interest there. And just in general, to say it again, I really feel like the person in Davey's spot is massively correct to be viewing the Christian in the game as a huge piece of red meat that everyone is going, for as long as he's alive, going to be wanting to chew up as quickly as possible. And that is the single best thing that the Davey person can hope for. So I am fully on board with this idea to keep Christian around at any cost. And so I guess to kind of get a little further into Davey's role within that, what did you think of his actual vote here and how that all played out?
He ends up, so Davey votes for Christian.
Right.
Yes. And I think that we are to believe that, or I think that we can now understand that everybody was aware of where the votes were going, right? That everybody who voted for Christian knew that two votes were going to go to Gabby.
I believe so.
Yeah. So I think that what Davey does here is totally defensible to Christian. So what he does here is he gives Christian this information, allowing Christian to protect himself. And Christian has all of the votes against him, basically. I mean, the two votes that went for Gabby, those clearly weren't, that was clearly he was clearly blindsided in that decision. He has nowhere else to go. Davey at least gave him this life vest to get out of this alive. So Davey has in some ways preserved that relationship. It doesn't reveal that he knew about the Gabby blindside. I don't know whether that's going to affect his relationship with Christian in any way, but he's also gotten rid of, they've also flushed Christian's idol in this round, which I think puts Davey in an even better position of he has a threat ahead of him, and he's also, gotten rid of that threat's idol so that you're not in a situation where he's going to still have an idol in his pocket to play at Final Five.
And also you can go find that idol that gets rehidden tomorrow morning.
Right. And Davey is one of those people who knows how to find an idol and is going to be, one of the people who's going to be, waking up before dawn and scouring the island. So I think that this is, I think that it puts him in a good spot.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see how this ends up going for Davey here. And in terms of that rehidden idol, I would imagine he's got to be one of the favorites, but we've also certainly seen Christian and Nick pick up their fair share of advantages as well. And I guess roughly on that subject, if you had to make a call, we've seen Chekhov's idol confessional early in this season from Angelina about how it's high time women start finding more idols and advantages. And so far, it has been 7-0 in favor of men. As far as this, what I'm going to optimistically call the last idol of the game, but maybe it's not, goes, which direction would you be leaning there? This potentially most important idol of the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting that the two parties in that conversation about women and idols on Survivor were Angelina and Allison. So those were the two women who had that conversation, and they're the only, well, Kara's still left in the game, and they're both still left in the game at this point. You know, I think that the editing this season has been creative enough that we can't, you know, draw a straight line. So we have that conversation that's dangling out in the air. We also have Davey's confessional right before Christian ended up finding his idol that said, you know, who finds idols? That's what, you know, that's what Davey Rickenbacker does. So he has, we have that sort of nugget out there that has, you know, yet to be tied in a bow. So I think that either of those things could potentially pan out. I mean, I would, I'll stomp down a little bit on this issue of the gender discrepancy in idols. It's really massive, and I don't have the numbers at my fingertips right now, but
it's over 80% now.
Yeah, I mean, it's so such a comically vast discrepancy, and if you look at winners of the most recent seasons, finding and playing idols is one of the largest, you know, indicators of somebody who goes on to be a winner. So this is something that, you know, the show is obviously aware of. They let that conversation make air. It has to be something that to some extent they're worried about. It's not a great look. So the fact that we saw that makes me really hopeful that we'll see something this season that addresses this issue of the gender discrepancy in finding idols. It would be a pretty disappointing thing to have us start the season with women that we know are aware of this and then have the whole payoff of that story being, and then those women still didn't find any idols. Like, I just don't know. I don't know why you want to open that can of worms if there's not going to be a payoff, but I, you know, I'm not going to put a lot of money on that, but I think it would be great if that's where we see this going.
Yeah. I'm going back through the Rolodex and I'm pretty sure the only person who has won in the last 10 seasons without playing at least an idol, at least one idol or advantage, is Michelle Fitzgerald.
Yeah, and then she had that, like, that silly jury thing. But,
oh, okay. She won a challenge for that, though, rather than finding something in the woods.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm very much flummoxed by how this continues to be such a recurring storyline on Survivor. And are you at the point where you feel like that discrepancy is an outright problem with the show when, you know, I was looking at the stats on this exact thing. I think it was either Survivor Central or Rob's Fact Checker. Someone tweeted out the idol stats and so forth. And along with the percentages, it also had a list of just the total number of idols and advantages in the last few seasons. And I believe that this next idol that goes in will be, over the last four seasons, idol / advantage number 35 that gets put into a game of Survivor. And when men are coming up with 82% of the idols and advantages, to me, that's insane to knowingly continue making those objects within the game so much more powerful.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to have an impact on, you know, when we look at the game on who has a shot of winning. I mean, I've thought a lot about, you know, what accounts for this gender discrepancy in idol finds. You know, I don't think it's a simple thing. You can say everybody has the same opportunities to find an idol. So in terms of whether this is a Survivor specific problem, it is a Survivor specific problem because we're talking about probabilities of winning Survivor, but is it more difficult for women to find idols because of something about Survivor or because of something about society? You know, I think it's much more about what gender expectations are in the broader world, but it has this impact on the way this game is played. And unfortunately, I don't think that this idol and advantage thing is something that Survivor can put back in the bottle. Like, it's much harder for them to take these things out of the game than it is for them to put more things into the game.
Yeah.
So I think that they're just going to have to start to think about ways that idols and advantages can be found that are not as dependent on spending a lot of time on your own searching around camp. I think that a buddy of mine, Sean Falconer, has looked at how the gender gap in how advantages have been, have gotten into players' possessions, and that's more balanced than idols. So when advantages are distributed in different ways, it seems like there's less of a discrepancy, but, you know, nobody is clamoring for more advantages.
Right. I mean, the situation is, over time, there is no longer doubt that when the mechanism is, we're going to put it in the woods and whoever wants it, go and get it. We know, we have had way more years than was necessary for a very meaningful sample size in that department. And the producers continue doing this, knowing this as well. And that's why, to me, like, if this were individual immunity challenges instead of individual hidden immunity idols, and men were winning 82% of individual immunity challenges for, like, 50, however many years it's been, like 12 years since the hidden immunity idol probably came into existence for the first time, and men are just constantly coming up with these hypothetical challenges, there would be an outcry. And I, for my money at least, a hidden immunity idol is much, much more powerful within the game than any one individual necklace. And that's why I can't believe that this continues to go unaddressed. And, I mean, the solution is easy as far as I'm concerned. The solution is randomly distributed idol clues. Like, we see over the course of history, that falls about 50-50 because it's random.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, so I think you're right. I mean, and even things like, you know, maybe doing, people like it when the idols are hit at the challenges. You know, that could be a way of doing it. But yeah, I think that this is clearly something that Survivor is going to need to adjust before it starts to just become, you know, really, really obvious to the viewer, to the larger viewership, because it's a problem.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about Gabby's decision here. In this initial move where she decides, I want to turn on Christian, now's the time. We talked a little about Gabby earlier, but in terms of gunning for Christian now, she's concerned that she's just being viewed as his sidekick, and if she doesn't take him out, she's never going to have a chance of winning in the end. How fair do you think that assessment was from Gabby at this point? And I guess by extension, do you feel that this was the right time to make this kind of move against her closest ally, in her own words?
Yeah, so the timing is a tricky question. I think that, you know, in hindsight, we can clearly say that it was too early, or it didn't work. So you can make the case that it was too early. So this is final eight. So she has, after this vote, she has three more chances.
Yes.
To get him out. And he has an idol. So that is going to take make one of those rounds, you know, potentially take one of those rounds out. I've heard her in her exit press say that he would expect it at seven, and he would definitely play his idol at seven. So she was hoping to blindside him at eight. And I think that that makes sense, that he was going to probably be looking to use his idol at six or seven. So it does start to get tight. I mean, we saw this with Laurel, and it was really frustrating that, you know, she didn't make a move. I think that Gabby was painted into a similar corner, only, you know, in Laurel's case, she had two tight allies that had idols. And I guess that Gabby does too, because Nick still has an idol. But I think that what ended up being more of the problem for Gabby than even the timing of it was that I don't think that she had built a strong enough alliance of people that were going to get her back on this. I don't think she had the social capital to pull it off. And I think that, you know, without Christian, it wasn't clear what her numbers would be.
Yeah, we saw from Nick a confessional saying something to the effect of, well, hey, you know, when she approaches him saying she wants to gun for Christian now, he says, this is fantastic. I've been trying to come up with a way to get Christian out myself. And maybe pretty much everyone she talked to was thinking in roughly those terms, where they were already really eager to get Christian out. And now Gabby coming to them saying, hey, don't even worry about lying to me about this plan. I'm fully on board and I'll ostensibly spearhead it myself, is pretty much best case scenario, especially when the rest of you could get on board and just make Gabby herself the backup vote out if it does end up not going her way. And that's where I'm kind of torn here, because it does seem like you're right. She didn't have necessarily the people who had who truly had her back that she maybe thought she did, like in the event that this did go through and Christian did get blindsided with an idol in her pocket. I'm not even sure if that would have been like a winning line for Gabby necessarily too often, but I do know this, it's way better than just sticking with Christian. And I am loving that Gabby was in there saying, sooner or later, I need to take this guy out. I have to take my fate into my own hands. I've watched way too many people before me go down this path, and it will absolutely not be me, following in those footsteps. And kind of like what I was saying about Davey earlier, talking in terms of wanting to keep around big threats, to me, hearing Gabby talk in these kinds of terms, it sounds like years ahead of its time, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I think this is going to be the future of Survivor if they keep casting players as aggressive and as Survivor literate as they have been for this season. I think we're going to see way more people stepping it up in the time is now to take action into my own hands department, because they are putting on more people who have watched year after year, the people who fail to put their foot on the gas, just you get mopped up in the end.
Yes, I could not agree with you more about all of that. I think that I was, when I rewatched the episode, I was taking some notes and of specific things that, you know, Gabby said, and I feel like it was like catharsis for all of the super fans who have watched those people play those safe, tight games and get to the end and not get any votes, or get to, you know, finals five or final six and then be voted out. And, you know, it was so refreshing to see somebody so aware of what their place was in the game and just fight from that position and take a big swing. So I think it was, you know, you can quibble about, you know, was this the perfect time? Was this the right move? Could she have had an opening? Was there another way to do it? Or, you know, could she have gotten herself a few more spots down the line? But I think that in terms of like speaking as a fan herself and speaking to the fans, I mean, this whole episode for Gabby was just music to my ears. And I felt like she went out looking totally fierce. It was the big swing. She identified the target that everybody knew was the target, and it's a much, much better way to go out than to get to the end and then, you know, be completely unrecognized for having done anything in your game.
Right. And my concern is that the viewers at home will potentially take away the wrong message from seeing Gabby try to gun for Christian and take her fate into her own hands, and then get the most severe comeuppance possible in the form of leaving like 40 minutes later in the episode. And I am really hopeful. I'm hoping. I'm not necessarily even hopeful. I don't know how likely it is to happen, but I'm hoping that the future Gabbies out there of the world are taking the correct lesson away from this and not being fully results oriented here. And it kind of goes back to what I said before of like, yes, while going out in eighth place totally sucks, it is vastly preferable to just essentially locking in zero equity for yourself going forward by just rolling with Christian. And so really hoping that in the future we see people able to disregard the end kind of message of this episode and really take away all of the great stuff that I think Gabby flagged up in this week.
Yeah, we got to get Jeff to make this the next Sierra voting out her mom moment.
Right. Absolutely. So as far as tribal council goes, the only real note that I had was something that I thought was, in fact, very interesting, which is Christian, when the time came to play idols, he said, "Give me a minute, Jeff. I want to get a read on these people." What did you think of that kind of tactic there? Or was that just theater as far as you're concerned?
Yeah. So I've heard this discussed and, you know, so I think that there's definitely the possibility that this is theater, right? I mean, I think that if, you know, given that we know that Christian had this conversation with Davey, he knows that his closest ally is gunning for him. He's probably feeling like he's getting some votes. I think that if you have an idol and you're going into a tribal council like that, that you're already probably leaning heavily towards the idea that you're going to play it.
Yeah.
But I loved that he did this, and I hope that this opens the door for more of this kind of temperature taking at tribal council. And the way that he executed it was, you know, he kind of waited to the last moment. And then when Jeff started, he said he asked for another minute and then he looked around. And I feel like that's really, really got to catch people off guard. And, you know, people do, I don't know if there was anything that he saw that specifically triggered him to play his idol, but it definitely made him look very clever to the jury, which right. In and of itself is fantastic. And I think it's an intimidation move. If he knows that the votes are coming for him and he puts on this show of sniffing it out during tribal council, you know, that's going to be a point in his favor. It kind of lets him relish that moment of playing the idol correctly even more. He probably gets some information on what people knew and what people didn't know. I think that there's just nothing bad about this, and I think there's every reason to draw this kind of thing out, and I hope that more players do it.
Yeah, if you want to go back and listen to our Survivor Cagayan Merge podcast, I brought this idea up, although Christian didn't quite take it to the fullest extent, I would say. I think the move, and I said in that, I believe it was that podcast, he said, what I would do if I were playing an idol, because we saw Tony almost do this when he got up to get that validated, is before you make your intentions known, don't sit there and announce, hey, I want to try to get a read. Get up and go stand next to Jeff and see how people react. And then you will get see the organic reactions to them thinking you were about to play an idol. And then if they look happy about it, just sit back down and don't play it. But that is the way to elicit a reaction from people that I would be advocating for going forward. But certainly I don't want to take anything away from Christian for only going like 3/4 of the way to the full Colin Stone score. But I really did love the idea here and was thrilled to see this when it actually ended up going down.
I want to say one other thing though about Christian playing his idol. I found it so refreshing for a male castaway to take the idol out of his shoe and not make a big show of how they've been holding an idol in their pants for, you know, so many days. It was very much a refreshing moment to have the idol come out of his shoe.
I don't think many idols could fit in shoes. I think that one had like a really small emblem.
It's true. It was one of the you know, one of the more busted looking idols, I think, in the show's history.
Yeah, I would say so. Anything else from this tribal council before just kind of parting thoughts on Gabby, if anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I thought it was really fun, like the evolution of Gabby's reaction as the votes were being read and Christian played the idol, like, you know, complimenting Christian and then apologizing to Allison and then realizing that she has a vote and then, oh my gosh, she gets voted out. I thought that that was really great. And, you know, just to shower some more praise on Davey, I noticed that there was like just this really organic, natural way that as soon as Gabby got up, he said, "Great game, Gabs." And then, you know, a couple of other people chimed in. But there was something to me that's like so free and easy and organic about Davey's relationships in this game. And I feel like he's playing a game, you know, that you made the comparison to Malcolm, and I'm going to make the comparison to Cochran, where he can like get away with making these moves, but then, you know, completely separating that from his social relationships in a way that I don't think anybody's going to take anything he does personally.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. What do you think about the prospect of Gabby returning to Survivor, given the way that she went out?
I would love to see Gabby return to Survivor. I think that she had a huge impact on the season. I think that she's the kind of smart, self-aware, and gutsy player that we would want to have. I think, you know, at the moment in her archetype, I think she has, you know, some things to recommend her, you know, compared to some of the other players that have played that are in that same type. So, I mean, I think I can definitely see it as a possibility that she would come back. I think that she would be fun. I was like not totally thrilled with the way that they really played up, you know, oh, she's so emotional and she's crying all the time and she, you know, needs Christian to carry her. I didn't love that. And I feel like there's been some negativity in social media about Gabby being a whiner or a crier. And I think she's responded to all of that in, you know, in such a beautiful and powerful way. So I don't know if that would affect her willingness to play again, but I mean, I think that, I think she would be great, and I think that she would have. I would like her odds on a second time out.
Yeah, I think so as well, and I would also suspect that there would be many timelines where we would see a much better version of Gabby on a future season. I really think she and Angelina in particular got pretty jobbed so far by the edit, but what can you do, I suppose, on Survivor? I would definitely be there for sure for having Gabby back on the show, and I'm excited. I guess, do you feel like Gabby as a juror could be particularly interesting for any reasons? Or I feel like she could be fun in that kind of back and forth environment, which is why I bring it up.
No, I think she would be really fun. And I think that some of her most fun moments on the show, like there was a great episode where, you know, she found out that that she was being left out of the vote by Carl. And like just when she got like angry and sassy. And I mean, that was real. I mean, that I think that that's a really fun gear that she switches into. And maybe we'll see some of that on the jury. I think that she'll, you know, she's really articulate, so I think that she could have some great points on the jury, have some good questions, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Amanda, I know you have a unique perspective on the edit zone that I'm very interested in getting to, but before we do that, for the people who aren't going to be joining us there, where can they be finding you on Twitter and so forth?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter. I'm A Rabinow, that's ARABINOW. Did I do that right? Yeah, that's it. So you can follow me on Twitter, and I do sometimes tweet about Survivor, and I sometimes tweet about brain injury rehabilitation.
Hey, the classic duo of timeline pairings. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. So I think with that, or I guess I suppose I am at Colin Stone on Twitter and Dom is at Dom HRV. You can email the show domandcolin@gmail.com. And now we will hit the edit zone. You are listening to the
Tom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken.
Brad Culpepper.
David Goliath.
You are listening to the
Tom and Colin
Edit Zone.
What are you doing?
Tune out now.
All right, here we are in the Edit Zone. And Amanda, I mentioned you have your own kind of take on all of this. So get into what you and Angie Kontz and Sean Falconer do.
Great. So, so we've been working on this. We kind of came out of an extension of Angie Kontz's character types that she does every season on the RHAP podcast. And, what she was interested in doing was kind of enhancing that by actually taking into account the types of things that different players do during the game. And a discussion about that goal sort of evolved into what we've been like sometimes calling the game bot system and sometimes calling just the system. But we've been doing for a number of seasons now. I think the first season we did this in real time was Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. And then we also did it for Ghost Island was the next season. And this is the third season then that we're doing this in real time. To cut to the chase, what it is we've identified these 22 different behaviors that we think are relevant to how you play the game. So there are things like analytical, diplomatic, perceptive, charming, abrasive, temper, egotistical. We have a list of these 22 things. We have definitions of them. And on an episode by episode basis, people who are willing to do this are watching the episodes and coding all of the players about as to whether or not they're exhibiting those individual behaviors.
Wow.
And we actually, when we first started this up, we had people do all of the retrospective seasons. So we had multiple coders coding each season of Survivor. We had about 60 different volunteers that were doing this, which was really incredible. And the result of that effort was this huge database of every person to ever play Survivor and these vectors that represented the extent to which they exhibited each of these behaviors throughout the course of their season. Where Sean Falconer comes in is, he has a background in computer science and advanced statistical methodologies. So he created a machine learning algorithm that basically can match any player to a set of previous players who are in two classes, either winners or non-winners, and you can get the probability that every player is a winner or a non-winner based on how well the behaviors that they're exhibiting match those other sets.
So when it comes to the edit, I'm someone who is obviously paying attention, but I don't ever even look at confessional counts. I am decidedly not a math player in the edit game. I am very much a feel player with the edit. For me, it is almost entirely just a function of how I feel someone is being portrayed compared to how they could have portrayed that person. And that's why the treatment Kara is getting is really standing out to me compared to Gabby and Angelina, both of whom, based on everything I've seen from them outside of the primetime hour on CBS, seem remarkably funny and charming and well put together, and very little like their CBS counterparts. Whereas I'm guessing, as lovely as Kara seems, not 100% of her life is necessarily always that glowing. And with that in mind, Kara has been my heavy front runner for a while now. What is your model kind of saying at this point?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So our model has so what we do is every week we spit out like a ranking of who is the, who looks the most like a winner and who looks the least like a winner. And basically from week two on through last week, we don't have the current episode done yet. Christian Hubicki has been number one as the player who looks the most like a winner. And one of the neat things that we can also do is we can match people to particular winners. So Christian is most similar
to... Can I guess?
You can, please do.
Oh, it sounds like it's not Cochran then.
No. It is Cochran.
Okay.
It's absolutely Cochran. So, well, I mean, and it's nice when things sort of make sense, you know. Kara, you want to guess what winner Kara is most similar to?
You know, I have some vague memories of feeling this way in a previous season. I'm going to go with Michelle Fitzgerald.
That's a really good guess. She actually is most similar to Amber.
Stay tuned. I feel to go into why I would have Christian behind Kara, because Christian is my number two at this point. I'm certainly not mm-hmm. all in on Kara. I still think Christian is in the mix. I could see Nick in the mix. I'm holding out some hope that Davey is somehow drawing live here as well. But to go back to what it really just comes down to for me, when I look at someone like Kara and what she's getting compared to what pretty much literally every single blonde girl who has played in the 30s has gotten, other than like Kelly Wentworth, it's remarkable, the contrast. Whereas with Christian, and this is exactly what I was saying about Aubrey as Ko-Rong was airing, the Michelle treatment only happens when Michelle wins, whereas Aubrey could very easily get that treatment as a non-winner. And I feel like that is what it comes down to for me with Kara and Christian as well.
I totally agree with you. You know, I don't think that there's almost no way that that you could edit any package of Christian and not end up like they're going to want to put in, they're going to want to show what he's doing. He's such a big player in the season, and he gives all of this confessional gold. He's incredibly compelling. It's hard to make the case for leaving a lot of that out, whereas it's very easy to leave out the confessional where Kara says, this is really good for my game.
Right, exactly.
I want to get Christian out too. There's, you know, you can, so I think that that kind of way of looking at the edit makes a lot of sense. I want
to
give
to quickly, sorry, but that specific confessional might be my number one indicator for me all season that Kara is the winner. Like, that seems like a confessional exactly like so many that Michelle got that were put in because they are saying the audience will not give this person credit unless we force these reasons for the audience to give them credit.
Yeah, no, I think that that's fair. I mean, the one thing that I would, the only thing I would say to maybe counter that reasoning is I do think that in particular in the wake of Ko-Rong, the editors have wanted to give us a little bit more to chew on with some of these secondary characters so that it doesn't seem so predictable.
With Ko-Rong, I think Aubrey was one in the line, and I would say maybe Spencer before her. As I've always been referring to it, the compelling losing finalist edit became a thing. And then for me, at least, though, it wasn't really until Ken came along that the compelling losing finalist looked too much like the winner. Ken, I thought, really got the Michelle treatment as well, of like just constantly going out of their way to make him look like the smartest, most intelligent, great survivor guy, when it seemed like in reality that may not necessarily be the case. And certainly that in the post Ken era, I am totally leaving the door open for Kara being the second place finalist or the compelling losing finalist. But I see at this point no timeline where Kara is not finishing first or second place.
Interesting. So since we're in the edit zone now, I don't want you to get out of this podcast without getting to talk about who we saw making fire this week.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I got a lot of people commenting to me. I guess shout out to my man, Nate Nunn, for being the first one about 10 seconds after that clip made air. My inbox was loaded with people tweeting about Allison, the long shot of Allison making fire. Yeah, this was the last thing in my notes, Frank. I said Allison fire is the last thing I wanted to remember to bring up this week. So what did you think about that?
You know, so we... I mean, this is, I don't, I don't know what to make of Allison making fire. I mean, I don't know what to make of Allison, frankly. I think she's the person that's in the mix at this point with, you know, with absolutely the least story by far. It's really, really hard to see her pulling out a win, even though it's clear that the people out on the beach with her see her as a threat, which, you know, makes me think that there's, you know, that there's probably more that we could be seeing if we were also to believe that.
Totally. Yeah.
So I would not be surprised if the editors wanted to mess with us by showing us this fire scene. I don't think that this is strong enough evidence for me to put it in stone that she's in the fire making challenge. But, you know, it also definitely doesn't give us any reason to rule her out of being in the fire making challenge.
Right. I'm going to play the fire challenge once bitten, twice shy this season. I am not going to be spending every single podcast talking about Donovan being a lock for the fire challenge. But yeah, I mean, I do buy, I guess, that a lingering shot of someone making fire can't hurt their chances of being in the fire challenge. But Allison in particular, I've had a tough time kind of getting a read on in terms of where she's going to end up here, because she was so invisible for the early episodes that I just ruled her out completely of being even a possibility as a winner. So when the time came that she started really rising to prominence, it almost took me by surprise. I was expecting her to maybe pop up for an episode or two before eventually being unceremoniously booted. But as of right now, I feel like she is kind of that invisible, the most invisible person in the cast, as you were saying, by a pretty wide margin. And to me, I would be leaning with that in mind, either fire loser or zero vote finalist.
Yeah, and it actually is hard. It's hard to, I mean, actually, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to reconcile the fact that other players seem to be talking about her like she's a threat, and the fact that we're not seeing it. And it makes me think that she doesn't get to the finals. I certainly have been wrong before. I do want to make, and just to go back to our system for a minute. She's never been in the top three most likely winners, except for in episode one. She was the number one most likely winner. So that was good episode one. This season, actually, the episode one rankings are totally, totally out of whack from every other episode that followed.
I think she was one of like a couple of people who didn't have a confessional in episode one.
Well, in episode one, I think she did the challenge. And that opening challenge, and she was the one who spoke up about what it was like to be a David or a Goliath, or so she did get something. Allison, you can
sure, yeah, I, yeah. I that just blows my mind that Allison came out of the premiere as number one, just given how much else was going on there. But listen, I certainly don't mean to like call into question the relentless coding that you guys have done. and it seems like we're on roughly the same page in terms of the realistic winner candidates. But what are the rankings at this point? It's Christian one, and then what?
So it's Christian one, and Nick is really close on his tail. And in the three spot is Mike White, and then right behind Mike is Kara.
Okay.
So that was as of week nine.
All right. I mean, I feel like this is a season, which is, to clarify, I think this is one of the single best things any season of Survivor could ever ask for, where it seems like a lot of people are all over the place in terms of who the eventual winner may be, which up until two or three seasons ago was almost unheard of. It seemed like there was such a long streak whereby at the very latest, the merge, it was just obvious who was going to win the season.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think we've had such an exciting mix. Like, I have to say that if Christian, Nick, or Davey won this season, I think that they would all be really, really incredible winners. And I think that Mike would be a good winner. I think that Angelina and Kara would both be interesting winners. I mean, there's nobody in here that I think is, you know, a total, is it like a total zero, that I think has a realistic shot at this. So that's pretty exciting. And I do wanted to add one other note about, you know, about the way that our system works. You know, as you noted, Colin, there is no consideration of narrative. We don't even look at confessional count or like visibility in terms of the amount of time in screen. It's
smart.
Just
no. I'm being serious. That like those kind of numbers are not going to be useful.
Yes. So I mean, and sometimes like I've coded some of these seasons before, and sometimes people can have a lot of time on the screen, but they're not actually showing any content that is relevant to how they're playing. They're just like having confessionals inserted, or you're seeing something, but it doesn't directly speak to how they're playing the game. So our aim with this was to make something that would actually quantify gameplay and not necessarily edit, because all of the information that we have access to about gameplay is filtered through the edit. It ends up being edit reading to a large extent, but you know, I kind of like the idea that it might allow us to rank gameplay independent of edit, which has allowed us to like do some other things with it, like look at, you know, which players are the most strategic or which players are the most likable. So you can kind of do these other things that sort of separate it a little bit from EGIC and other edit reading mechanisms.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds truly fascinating. Is there a way that this is publicly accessible where people can see the results from past seasons?
Yeah, so Sean Falconer updates this weekly on his blog for the most part, and that's seanfalconer.blogspot.com.
How do you spell Sean?
You spell it the correct way, which is S-E-A-N, and then Falconer is F-A-L-C-O-N-E-R.blogspot.com. And I don't mean to throw shade on the alternate Sean spellings, that's where you can find the current season, and you can also go back and look at the Ghost Island and HHH results. And I think that's the first time we did that. And then there's also, if you dig back into his blog a little further, you can read more about our methodology and, you know, and the way that we arrived in this. But it's, you know, it's been a really fun thing to work on. Like, we have high hopes for different kind of things we can do with it. You know, the winner predictions is, I think, only one application, but it's been fun.
Awesome. Amanda, thank you so much for taking so much time. I know it's getting late and you presumably have to be up relatively early with the kids. But one more time, she is at A Rabinow on Twitter. Anything else you want to get out there?
No, that's it. But thanks again so much for having me. It's really, really fun to break down these episodes. And, you know, and you and Dom are always really, really smart and fun about talking about Survivor. So I love any opportunity to talk with you guys.
Well, hey, thank you so much. And all the best with you and the family and the law firm. And I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Yeah. And everyone who made it this far, thank you guys, of course. One more time, I am at Colin Stone on Twitter, and you can email the show domandcolin@gmail.com. We will be back, I'm sure, very soon. How many episodes are left before the finale? Is it just one more episode left before the finale?
I think it's one episode and then the finale.
All right.
Not 100%, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is correct. So we will be back to break down the latest episode and preview the finale next week. We will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.